We're back in English again.
Oh, in English.
Yeah. It's difficult.
Yeah, always. then I don't compete.
Ja, dat gaat jou.
Thanks, man.
Ralph's already gone.
Took 2 seconds and internet connection is already gone for Ralph.
Well, ben ik er niet dan?
Well, hello? There's some delay now, and we see you in blocks, but it says the actual recording will be better, so we hope that in this podcast you can hear well perfectly.
Do you have a lot of tabs open in your browser?
No, it's the fucking, it's the program, man. It just sucks.
The whole world is using this program, and he's blaming the program.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Works fine with Jobke.
It worked fine amazing. With Zencastr.
No, you were shitting about Zencastr as well.
But am I back now, or is there something wrong?
It's back, okay.
But I see 2 pixels.
It's okay-ish. No, you're fine now. You're fine. But you should close everything that uses internet and...
And I can suggest on your PC or laptop... Or, yeah, laptop's not possible, but use a cable for internet. It's the most stable.
Mm-hmm.
Good tip.
Yeah.
Because Wi-Fi...
They also
and
don't
I
have a car, but a horse with a wagon.
Yeah, but the Wi-Fi were in 2023 and still...
Yep.
Issues.
Sucks. I must say, ever since I got those... how do you call those things? Like spreaders, as in you put them throughout the house. I'm not sure what
they're... Yeah, the Wi-Fi boosters.
Yeah, the boosters
every
things.
Every company has a different name for it.
Yeah, but those work amazing. Like, we have perfect internet everywhere now. Probably nice. The rest of the street has our internet as well. But it works great.
Yeah, I'm going to move soon and also get a new internet subscription. And then I also get, like, extra Wi-Fi boosters. Or Wi-Fi, as we should say in English. But in Holland, we call it Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi. Where's the Wi-Fi?
Exactly.
Home is where the Wi-Fi is, huh?
Exactly.
Okay.
And now Ralph is all the way gone.
Yeah, Ralph is...
departed.
Yeah, well, he's here.
Hey, I got a complaint about our podcast.
Huh.
From a guy I know very well. His name is James. So if you're listening... well, actually, we're very happy with... Any feedback. He said he turned it off because it wasn't really going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. That's the whole point.
I was like, yes, well, you should have listened because it gets really interesting the more we talk. But also,
is it the feedback he gets on his music usually?
But it's like, I like that it's like we just talk how we would actually talk. And then that's where the most interesting topics come out of. And of course, if you have suggestions, if you're listening to this, always welcome.
Yeah.
In fact, I posted a tweet.
We do have a lot of suggestions. You had a lot of suggestions.
Yeah.
I had a lot of suggestions. So maybe we should just pick one.
Yeah, actually, Hartwell replied to my Instagram and he said we should talk about frikandellen.
Good Not point. Everyone knows what frikandellen are.
So I like frikandellen.
Frikandels. Ralph, do you remember the track I made with Epster back in the days called Frikandel?
That's haram. I cannot imagine him making a track about frikandellen.
Dude, I don't know what's going wrong on your laptop, but your...
Fix up your internet, mate.
Yeah, your internet's horrible. Anyway,
it's this program, man.
No, you're constantly glitching. Your video is gone. Like, which browser are you using? Maybe that's the problem. Maybe
stupid Google Chrome. I have to use.
I'm using Chrome as well.
I'm using Chrome as well.
I usually use Firefox.
Nah. Jesus. Ralph, reboot and try again.
Maybe is Rente uploading something or?
Probably. Okay, Ralph left. He's probably coming back. But Which topics did you get on your...
So frikandellen, although I love them, it's a snack in Holland.
It's a nice snack.
There's not much to say about it other than it's meat that otherwise goes to waste. And it's now put into a delicious snack, which you deep fry. And it's probably very unhealthy, but it's delicious.
I think if you've ever seen the process of how they make it, you'll never want one again. But yeah.
Yeah, I think
to
so
me
too.
It's one of the most... the best.
I got a question from Jonas738, and he said, what do you think of the upcoming style Big Room Techno?
Yeah.
But I suggest listen Breakno. To the last episode.
Yeah, last time we kind of went pretty deep into the whole Big Room Techno-ish kind of thing. Right? Or yeah. Would you guys like to add something to that?
Are we starting the podcast over or just
no,
presuming? Or...
Just presuming.
Okay.
You fucked up. Everyone knows.
So, what's the question?
Jay had a few ones on his Instagram. What was the next one after the Big Room one?
There's one on about our who spends more time in the gym. But I also think we actually talked about that also in the last episode.
Did
then
we?
There's one, collabs and upcoming tracks. But that's not really a, is that
no.
a topic.
Yeah. I had the interesting one. I put it in the app.
The app?
Yeah.
Okay. What was it about?
Please, in the next one, talk about how to get a collab with you guys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean bigger artists. If you are an aspiring producer like most of us watching you. I got it in the email. Somebody replied on the ad, a t-shirt giveaway thing. Also, it's ended now. I'm done walking to the postal office.
How much did you send?
Yeah, not so much. But enough. First one already gave me the creeps and only had to go to Breda. The last one, this guy has to go to a bit further. I forgot where to. But... I don't mind. It's not a big issue. I sent like 8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot.
But also kind of, hey, they're actually listening. That's quite cool.
Exactly.
And if you're listening, also, I thought this was a good question because the guy or girl, I actually don't know, he or she sent also a potential collab. And then I noticed right away... it wasn't our style per se that actually diminishes your chances to, I mean, rather have it our style. But to be honest, I don't care if it's good. If it sounds good, it is good. But then it was just really a demo. And I said, if you want to increase your chances to work with a bigger artist, make sure it's like 98% done. In my opinion, a lot of artists work different, but as we all know, there's also a lot of artists that are not really totally responsible for their own music. And you can make of that what you want and for whoever you want. And usually the bigger artists just jump up on something they really like, and then maybe they do something to it. For us, to be honest, it has gone like, from left to right, when Brooks sent Elmo, like creatively the track was almost done already, but it sounded like a turd dropping on the pavement. So that's when we took the whole mixing and I reproduced a lot of fragments of the track. Whereas sometimes it was just a good idea. The second collab with Brooks was a way smaller demo by him that I then finished for him. But it can always go both ways. But a lot of the artists you know or see, they are more benefited when a track is, like 80% done and they can just jump upon it. And it's also become quite not a quality thing, but also quantity is really important for an artist. So for a bigger artist, he or she can think like, hey, this is also a nice track to have in the... in the catalog and let me jump up on it. So
I think,
but that's my thought.
I think the 80% done rule also has to do with sometimes as a producer, you have an idea in your head how you want your track to sound, but other people won't hear it because you have like, you, for instance, you have a melody and you're like, yeah, this is not the final sound yet. It will sound huge. And sometimes other people can hear it like, oh yeah, I can see it. But most of the times other people will be like, I don't know how you envision this track to sound like in the end. So you have to also, for labels, make sure that it is way more done so that they can actually get an idea of like, oh, this is what it's going to sound like. So also for them, it's more convenient for a big artist to jump on a track that's almost finished.
Yeah,
already.
But never but send something just... that's 80% done. It has to be 98%.
Yeah,
also
okay,
for
more.
A label.
Yeah, more. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's what I mean. But like, there needs to be already like, how is it going to sound? And what I think is always funny in my demo drop, go to my website, jhardware.com. You can put your demo in there. It's always funny when people say it's not mastered yet, and then it sounds like terrible and like not finished at all yet. If it's that not mastering is not the issue there, it's mostly about it's just not at all finished yet. Mastering and mixing, that's the final step, and it should already sound at least good enough to play in a live set, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think that where the question might come from is I think that a lot of aspiring artists don't believe that big artists are open for collaborating with smaller artists, because you kind of need to bring something to the table, as in if you collab as a big artist, if you would collab with a smaller artist, yeah, you don't bring that much to the table, at least that's what they assume. But I think you do bring something to the table, as Ralph mentioned. You bring a new track to the discography, as in you bring a new opportunity to the table, kind of like a free track to them. And as long as it fits to the artist's profile, it might be interesting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can also, if you turn it around, if I want to work with a big artist, I got to bring way more to the table creatively and everything else than the big artist. For me, it's such a big advantage and maybe also an honor to have him or her collab with me. But business-wise, it's a big opportunity for me. So I have to carry the load for them. And that's just how it works. It always has been. Yeah. Carry the load. Yeah. Is that the thing?
I saw Jay smiling. Right in the alley of self-release.
Yeah. Exactly.
But carry a load? How, man? How's the home? How's the relationship, Jay? Because yeah, since
very good.
I cannot say anything, then sex comes to mind.
You just got a kid, man. Don't blame him.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay.
It's just like, I feel sometimes when one of you is talking, and it's maybe because we're not sitting in the same room, you feel like, oh no, you're in the back of the class and the teacher's like, and you're like with a friend and you think of something stupid, and then you, because it's stupid and you have to be kind of silent, you just, the urge to laugh is more there. So
start giffling, yeah. Yeah. I've got a follow-up thing that's relatable to the question of collaboration, as in it came from someone in my Discord, Judge Mextent. I don't know how to pronounce that. anyways, he had a few questions, but let's just first start off with the first one, which is, as a starting artist, he would like to know, what would you guys do to get exposure? So would you remix popular DJs and give those tracks away for free on SoundCloud?
Definitely.
Would you focus on getting signed on a record label, even if there's no tracks that have been released yet? Would you look at spending money on Spotify marketing? Blah, blah. So the question is, what would you do if you were an aspiring artist at this point? What would you do to get exposure?
All of the above.
Maybe something else?
No, yeah, I mean, in great bootlegs of popular tracks right now, whether they're dance or pop, whatever, That's always a good one to get into the sight of bigger artists. For me, for instance, a lot of employees, huh?
Employees, yeah, it's the staff. The ghost
producers.
Where do
you get the good ones? No, it's my ghost producer. And now it's actually my wife. She's working here also today. So got to watch what I'm saying. And
thin ice, thin ice.
Self-release and all stuff. No, but when I have, when I'm going to through demos, I have to pick and choose which one I'm going to listen to because there's so much. I cannot listen to it all. And for me, I rather listen to something that's already familiar that could always have a nice angle in a set or so. And sometimes even when I hear somebody having made a bootleg, sometimes I just cut out their break and use it for our own bootleg. I'll obviously ask permission then. But it kind of gives me ideas also to make our own bootlegs. I think bootlegs are a really strong tool to get in there. And also, I can see it also, it works on SoundCloud. There's a lot of DJs that want to play the new David Guetta, but then in a different style. So yeah, I think that's one of the most good ways to do it. Spotify marketing, I think that's a really tough subject. Yeah, how do you get to do it? Oh, man.
Do you do anything yourself regarding Spotify marketing, or is it mostly labels who take care of that?
I got to say, it depends on which record it is and which market it is. But if you have like a club record, there's no real upstreaming going on. And then you got to carry the load yourself.
What's upstreaming? What do you mean with upstreaming?
Well, if you have like more like a record that's more streamable, then different territories of record labels, they all work their own territories. Like if you work with Spinning or whatever, or Smash the House, they do not work all markets themselves. And they don't consider each market or the total world market as one. If you look at the Spotify dance chart of Mexico, it's way different than the one in Germany, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And the one record will work in the one territory, but not in the other one. So you got to have your expertise per territory also. So if you have a more streamable record with a bit more budget behind it, then you get the upstream partners of all the different territories.
Mm-hmm.
But like club tracks, yeah, they don't have, that's like a universal thing. And also more, that's more for the dance floor anyway, for festivals. And they do come in a lot of workout playlists, but that asks for a different approach that's more universal also. And that's when you gotta put into work your own socials, maybe partner up with a brand you know, and see how there's a possibility to get people acquainted with your music.
But I think that's the hard part for an aspiring artist. There's not many parties that you can collab with because you're not interesting enough. So
no, that's why it's a hard one. Yeah,
it's very difficult. But I think you shouldn't, as a like beginning artist, definitely not look at the numbers game right away, or look at how can I change, get my socials up. You need to like do something that's very cool and very unique. So that's the first thing I would focus on. Like, I want to create a cool thing. What is cool? What do I think is cool? This kind of music. And then you got to find people around you that also have that same creativity or that same spark in there, what they think is cool, and you kind of could create maybe a movement through a forum or a Discord, find people that are like-minded, and then you can like work together more and more. And I think that's where you create something cool that then people want to be part of. And it's difficult because the labels will still be like, yeah, man, that's nothing. But I think that's the way to start nowadays, because if you're no one and you go to a label, they really think like, yeah, that's a nice track, but you have no numbers, no streams, there's no hype around you, there's no story there. So I kind of feel like that's what you should first focus on. Like, what do you think is cool? What do you work on your craft? Make sure you make awesome music or work with people that make awesome music so you can have like the vision. And then go, I think that really works. I think that's still like a thing of, you know, collaborate with others. Otherwise, you're going to get stuck in your own little computer. And it's harder and harder to get your stuff heard through social media. If I look at myself, I am distracted by my phone a lot. I'm on TikTok a lot. I'm on Instagram a lot. You really have to switch all that off and search for music to find new cool music, instead of like there wasn't that much on the internet, so to speak, so you would find new music sooner.
It's just really hard, but even also when you're a little bit established or not, how to market your music and which markets do you want to speak to and who do you want it to listen. And all in all, for an aspiring producer, but also for us as somewhat more established artists, it's the most easy way to actually get to other people that do not follow you, because that's the point. Mm-hmm. The ones who follow you already follow you. You can only cater them with the stuff you do, but you want to have more followers. I get it. And the easiest way is to get support of the DJs and they play your music. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest one. But yeah, how do you stand out of the crowd when there's so many people making music and the level of making music is so high?
Yeah,
and that's really a hard one.
I think it's related to what Jay mentioned as well. You first need to build a story, as in the quality of the music. It's hard to stand out with the quality of the music because it's a lot of people make high quality music.
It's about the question. Why would somebody play your music? Yeah. What does it have that other music doesn't have, you know? And that's the more, I mean, you're not going to invent a whole genre. I mean, Skrillex did, but man.
You can.
Those are the happy few that are so insanely good.
Yeah, but you still can. I mean, you always can invent a new genre. That's the nice thing.
There's but the possibility of that happening is also really slim. So
true, but that's not what I
assume. We're all mediocre, which I am.
That's what everybody also told us, you know, or at least me. Like, it's such a small chance that you will be able to make your living. But if you just see how you can go towards your goal, and like, I think you should never say you can't invent a genre. I think that's very, very possible. I also think we talked about this last week when I showed you my new track. That's like kind of an acid. Has an acid sound in it, and it's like, it sounds really good. It will work on festivals, it will work on other people's radio shows. And then Ralph made the good point, like, but who's gonna play this out live? Because it's a really good track, but for that track you have 100 others, and they also have their own music to play, so it's really hard to get into a set unless you have a new genre that you invent, or some new kind of hit or
angle, something fresh. But I think it's so hard.
Like, even for starting artists, like we as well, like Ralph said as well, like we as well struggle with that. So that is actually a really good question if you think about it.
It's definitely true. Also, if you look at a set of a DJ, take for instance, Bass Checkers. I actually know those guys. I am one of them. For those who were listening and don't know who I am, my name is Ralph. I'm the producing part of Bass Checkers. But our own set, if we play Tomorrowland, we only have an hour of music to play. We have to play our old hits. We don't have to. We also want to. Like Derp. I mean, I still love that record. It has to be in there, and some others as well. Then we have all our new music that we want to present. And then you mix it up with some of the existing hits because, that's also nice. And it's also good to make your own stuff heard together with something that's already established. and then we're done with the hour. Do I have to play? How many minutes do I get to play of somebody else? When our own output is also so high, man, it's so hard to squeeze yourself into the sets of others. You maybe play only two or three full tracks by others in your set. And yeah, and if you then take into account that there's so many people making music and also good music, yeah, what are the chances? But still, there is always a chance, and it's never, it's not easy to get into the music scene right now. So that's also has to be said. But
I think there's two different ways of how you can build a career, and I think you guys are doing it both in kind of different way. That's also the reason why you're not always
the hard way.
And I think that's also the reason why you're not always on the same line.
Your sound effect bank, Joey.
Yeah, I haven't found it here.
Yeah,
should find it. But I think one way to do it is to create something you are really passionate about. Stick to that and wait for your time to come around. You know, wait until it's time when that genre can get create momentum, I'll explain. But I think this is more like Jay's tactic. He's more like super close to what he thinks is important to make, and he's willing to wait until his time comes around. And the other thing is kind of compensate and say like, okay, if I add a little bit of this to my sound now, the chances of me getting more popular or getting a reaching a bit bigger crowd, get bigger. So you kind of, what's the word, like you kind of you're willing to kind of let go your own 100% vision. Sorry?
Compromise a bit.
Compromise, yeah, kind of compromise. You're willing to compromise on a sound to kind of take the commercial aspects a bit more serious and think like, okay, you know what? If I add this, it becomes easier to make a living from this, to make money, to get gigs, to sell tracks. And the only thing I have to do is kind of compromise a small bit on my music. If I look at the type of artist that I talk to, it's kind of almost kind of those two type of artists. It's kind of like the one who's not willing to compromise and one who is.
Well, just for the record, I am willing to compromise because I think you always have to compromise a little bit. But I think, the way you say it, it makes sense. I like to go into the studio, focus on what I love to make, and then craft those ideas into stuff that a label might release or other DJs might play. And I think I don't, before I start, I hardly ever think, sometimes I do, hey, what if I make a track for that could work as a collab for? I do that sometimes as well. And that's also a good production tip for everybody. Let's say like my collab with Tujamo, I was making something and this sounds a bit like Tujamo. Let's just finish it and send it to him. It became a really cool collab. But also, even if it doesn't become a collab, you have a new cool sound. My track Wake Up is a good example of, I wanted to make a kind of like a show tech lead. They had this hard, like kind of weird saw lead. And I was like, I want to make a lead like that, a lead synth. And I just created something. Tried it, didn't work, but it became something totally new that was inspired by that. And it became my own sound for that song. While I started, like, hey, what if I make a show tech sound? And it didn't end up like a show tech sound, but it became something new.
Inspired by, yeah.
So it can be also a really good way to start.
Yeah.
Song or a new sound.
I once read a book about this, which said that the whole world was a bootleg. As in, every idea that you have is made up by a lot of things that you've seen in your life, heard in your life, and you might not even be aware of it, that you've heard it or seen it, but all those things come together, combines a new product, new, as in it's a mixed, a remix. But still, it's a nice way to create new stuff. What I just posted a quote before this recording. which kind of relates to this. I was listening to a book, and this quote what came from that book, which was, when you are competing with other people, it's only because you're trying to copy them. Become authentic and the competition will fade.
Yeah, I love that quote.
I loved it. You know, like once you start embracing the fact that you are different from everyone else, you kind of let go of the competition. And the only downside that it could bring is that this might not be the easiest time. Oh, Ralph just left
us again.
But it might just not be the most interesting time for your sound, because not everyone might be ready for it. But yeah, still, it's you're authentic to it, and it's just a matter of time until people are ready to embrace it.
I love that quote, and I think it's very important there that you believe in your own abilities and your own sound, because if there's any doubt there, it's like the universe or so other people will sense it. So you really need to be sure about your abilities. I remember when I wasn't a full-time DJ yet, I knew I could do it. I knew I could produce great music which other DJs would play. And that gave me really a motivation to keep going. And I think lately I've been more insecure, definitely in the times of Corona, and that you notice that, and other people kind of feed on that, and they kind of like, if you go to a label, say, "Hey guys, what do you think of this? Maybe it's good for you." And they're like, no, maybe not. Well, if you you can do this with the same music, if it's good enough, you can go to a label like, "Hey, this is so awesome, I love this," but you have to actually be genuine. And they sense that. They're like, "Hey, there's something here."
Like conviction or something. It's like you're just super sure that it works for the label and for you as well.
Yeah, but you can't fake that. So that's the other thing. You can't really fake.
True.
You can't fake faith or like believing in something.
There he is again. Ralph's back.
You can't fake believing, we just said, and you can't fake a good internet connection, Ralph.
I guess so.
Oh, man. No, I really, now the internet connection is totally gone. Curva.
No, but you're like, it was stable during the whole connection, so.
Yeah, but I'm now on my, hey, sexual again. I'm on my hotspot.
nice. Okay, next topic.
The whole world is a bootleg. That's where I went out.
Yeah, and I mentioned the quote. I'm not sure if you got that, but the quote was, when you are competing with other people, it's only because you're trying to copy them. Become authentic.
Still again,
still blurry.
Yeah.
Well, like, isn't connected. Anyway, let's go to the next topic, which is more production minded. Do you guys have any golden rules for production? So things you kind of do which are essential to your sound.
Use your kick as a reference for the rest.
Could you explain
volumes
it?
And everything? Yeah, what
like
I noticed.
Mixing wise.
With a lot of demos and sorts, I always notice that it just doesn't drop really well, and the breaks are way too loud. And then I noticed they didn't use the drop or the kick as a reference.
Mm-hmm.
In dance music, it needs to. To pump, it needs to have energy, and you need that that heartbeat raised, you know.
What? Now it's not me. Come on, now it's not me.
Dance music works, man.
Yeah, it was the pump. Sorry.
Hey, the pump.
pump in the gym.
Yeah, but it needs to pump.
Yeah.
What the fuck, dude?
It's
actually because. You get the pump, it raises your heartbeat because it's 130 to 150 BPM and you're normally around 100. Maybe you, such a nervous guy like yourself, it's a bit more, but...
60.
It raises your blood circulation, makes you pump. No, but the kick is just so important, and always take that as a reference and build, design the rest of the track around that kick. That's the real golden rule there is.
So you start off with putting the kick on like 0 dB?
No, No, it depends. I don't look at it that way. Has to be you always want to work
for the drop.
Yeah, you want to in the end you want to inflate your track through compression. Not sure if I say it right, but so you have to give it some headroom and then pump it up. But yeah, so okay, but I cannot say I've put your kick at -6 dBs or so.
No, I feel like the question is very technically oriented, like what are some ground rules? There are some ground rules like that. Like I know on the Laidback Luke forum, he used to say like, yeah, in your baseline, always take off the very lowest part of the bass because you want your kick there. Yeah. And again, that is dependent on what kind of kick you use, how the bass plays with the kick. So I think if you're beginning, it's definitely good to search for some tutorials like, hey, always start with this template. But I
know some tutorials.
For me, maybe we can tell people there's a lot of tutorials available. 14-day free trial and Artist Coaching Academy. It's amazing.
It's actually something I get to a lot in the tutorials also. Mm-hmm. You got to create room for everything. That's what it's about. In your stereo image, your EQ spectrum, everywhere.
I think for me, my golden rule is although I really rate like technical aspects and it's important and you can create the room, my golden rule is if it sounds good, that's what it's about. And it doesn't matter at all how you achieve that if it sounds good. But then the thing is, how do you make something sound good? Sometimes you need to mix it well and use some like rules about EQ or whatever to get that better sound. But I think overall, for me, it really helped to just let go of like, what do I need to do? And then you learn as you play around with EQ and you learn stuff. But it can be very keep you stuck if you think you have to do something a certain way.
I think it's also good to realize that there are no rules in music production, as in it's good to have certain rules, like, okay, I want my kick in mono or whatever, but that's just technically fine. But even
I'd love to hear a kick in stereo.
But even with that rule,
low end.
No, but even with that rule, like, I'm not sure which track it was, but it hasn't been that long, that had like a stereo kind of kick which sounded super wide. I'm not sure which one it was, but it sounded great. So I think it comes back to what Jay says. In the end, it should sound perfect. As in, if it sounds perfect,
never make your kick stereo, please.
No, but
on the low end, you can make the high end stereo.
Exactly. I think it was at the high end because it sounded like stereo. The low end was obviously mono.
Well, like also, they all do with the rumble kicks right now. Or
mostly, maybe think about what do you make your music for. If you make it for a festival, you definitely want the low end to be nice and mono. You want to have crisp and clean highs. You know, you want the track to be mixed very well. Because the festival sound system is just, it's huge, and every little, you might not think it, but every little detail can matter. I remember once I was at Ultra, and I think Martin Garrix played Turn Up the Speakers. And the kick in there it's so well done. It's also there's not many elements in that mix, but it's so clean that I just got goosebumps from this kick that just rammed through that festival. And that is what you actually feel when you're at a festival. Then if you don't make music for festivals, I mean, fuck it, just do whatever you want, put everything in mono or in stereo in the low end. Just when you think about those rules, also think about, where do I want my track to be played, or do I just want to listen to it?
No, but it goes way beyond that. Imagine yourself playing a crappy disco in Baalwijk. There's not a good sound system there. If you make your track really stereo, I assure you right away, all the levels will be effed up. It will sound like shit. And you got to take into account that not every setup is really good. And So yeah, you got to choose your battles and take into account, especially where you want to have it played. Sometimes a lot of stereo, when you listen it on your phone, it also sounds like crap. And yeah, so, but that's something only I can only advise. Look at a lot of tutorials, learn about it. Try to visualize how it needs to sound. Did I say something about sex again?
No, no, I just said in between, like Artist Coaching Academy.
Shamelessly promoting. One thing that I got learned that someone learned me that as well is what Ralph said is you should make it visual in your head. As in, if you imagine a room where a drummer needs to be and a guitarist needs to be and a saxophonist needs to be, the more people you need to squish into that room. Dude. The more people you need to squish into that room, the harder it's going to be to move around.
Harder.
Oh, this is going to be tough. But anyway,
Visual. I saw once a video. It's a very old video about, I think, compression or EQ or whatever. But it has this ugly ass visuals in that video about where the sound is visually. Mm. And let's see if we can find it. Maybe I'll post it on Twitter. It shows you like, hey, here's the bass and it's in the low end. And then if you have that, I saw this like years ago. And then if you have that in your studio and think about it that way, it's almost like you're building a puzzle like visual in your computer, like on your speakers. You're like, hey, the high end is actually here in the high. It's just really, I can't really explain it, but that video did it. That's pretty awesome.
Works the same in my mind, to be honest. I also visualize the mix itself.
Mm.
It's weird how that works. Okay.
Yeah, but I also got to say, I think mixing is really important. We actually sometimes left tracks out of our set because when they were actually cool tracks. But when they were played in between tracks of our own, man, it just was like you would have a Fiat Cinquecento racing together with Ferraris, you know. And it needs to be a little bit on par. And if your track's not on par with most of the tracks, then in a set you can just hear it. You have to put your gain totally open. It will sound distorted and everything. Yeah. And that's also something you don't want.
That was actually a personal check for me back in the days when I wanted to know if my track was done. I played it in a live set at home and kind of listened to it as, does it sound weird in like a bigger picture?
Mm-hmm. Well, no,
it's funny how that works as a DJ where you're like, especially when you don't plan your set, like if you're in a club somewhere and... there's just some tracks that you're like, you like them, but there's something bugging you about it. There's like also tracks of my own that I'm like, eh. And it's a lot of times it is that mix. If a track really pumps, you almost always get excited when you see it in your folder. And like, I can always play that because that always works. And that has a lot to do with the mix for sure.
Would you outsource mixing and mastering, or would you say it's too personal?
I always do. I didn't do that in the beginning that much. But because my creative process is just, I start making and I throw in there whatever I think works. And I'm not too much focused on those mixing details because I want to get the idea out of there as fast as I can. And then I play it and I change up until I can change it and up until like I can make it sound mixed. And then I go to a mix and master engineer and I say, hey, here are the parts. And I get distracted here, man.
All those here stuff, are the all those people
do your
working
thing,
for
your producer. Do your thing. And the funny thing is, you think that will solve everything, but that's also not the case. You then need to go back and think like, hey, is this still does it still have the energy and the kind of bounce that I want? But I think mostly in the main thing is, people are walking here, man.
You have two ghost producers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Three actually. I don't know exactly what I was gonna say now.
Mixing.
Mixing and mastering. No, I don't know what I was gonna say.
That the creative aspect is still mixing and mastering is not going to fix your creative aspect.
No, like also like sometimes I have a master and I send all my parts to someone who masters the track and they come back with a way too clean version. But I'm like, yeah, but there's some kind of grit in here that some kind of like just kind of a way of dirty mixing that really then works for that track. And they just took all that energy out of it. So you have to be there. Yeah, also
definitely
careful.
Depends on what kind of music you do.
True.
Our latest track, Comte, man, that kick is just so over the top. That's the character it has. If I would send it to somebody external to mix it, they would never do it that way. But like Wrong or Right, that's actually a track that could have perfectly gone to an external mastering person. And we actually did it sometimes in the past. There's a lot of people, or not even a lot of people, some people, they know their craft so well. And they can do a way better job than I can do myself. And sometimes, we also released a lot of stuff that just always felt a little bit off, you know, you just didn't get it right. And I wouldn't use it all the time. I think it's part of producing also, can make you really distinctive from the rest of the field. If you do your own mastering. I don't know if I said it the last podcast that I was at the Hartwell studio like a few months ago. And he showed me some stuff. Man.
Frikandelle?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Again with the sex things. No, but he showed me a few things mixing and mastering wise. And actually, whoa, that was like, I did a lot of stuff not the right way and actually learned a lot from it. That's also fun about collaborating. You can learn a lot of the other one you're working with and vice versa. But yeah, and also that's why if you listen to his track, he just stands out. He's, I think, one of the best mixing and mastering wise. You need to be complete, like really complete.
I want to make a bridge here to the next one, which is if you would start all over again as an artist, what's the thing that you would do differently?
Ooh.
I wouldn't sell a number one hit record in Holland.
For how much?
Still stinks, right?
Yeah. It's been 15 years.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't do anything different. I think we've been also very lucky and kind of makes me scared sometimes if I think like, wow, if we did some things a little bit differently, then I wouldn't know where we would have ended up.
Yeah.
Sometimes we made a little bit rash decisions. Strategically, which label you want to release, which one not, and just think it through. And it's also it's people you're dealing with, so be kind and be friendly and just talk about everything. I wouldn't do anything different.
For me, I also think I wouldn't do anything different because I wouldn't be in this place in life right now, and it's way too complex, butterfly effect, and so on. But I do think very important to note is there if you have like a hit or you get a bit popular or whatever, if there's opportunity, you have to take it right away and jump on it. So if someone big wants to collab with you, don't think like you have the time. You really don't. It's opportunities come and go very fast. So I think if I don't regret it, but sometimes I think, oh, I could have spent a bit more time on that or reply to that guy's email or, you know, it goes fast. And especially when you're in a period where everybody wants to work with you, that's not gonna last. So I'm like, I don't have any regrets. I'm happy with the way I did things. That's just, but it's important to notice that, and I'm fine with it, but like opportunities don't stick around. And also in that, I always felt like in the beginning of my career, and before, I was like, oh, I want to make movies, movie music, music for movies. And that's also something where you kind of think, oh, I will do that someday. That's a lie. That you will never do it unless you do it now. Like, do it now. Start now or this week.
Just
even
do it.
This week already. Like, already, even in my advice, I'm postponing something. Now, if you want to do something, do it now. Because, oh, someday I will. That's bullshit. Yeah.
I think that the part that you both talked about, like you wouldn't do anything different, is interesting. As in, a lot of aspiring artists are kind of freezing, as in they're kind of stuck to where they are because they don't make any decisions, and they're only overthinking all the decisions they can make. You know, like, should I release this song? Should I start posting content? Should I start finding collaborations? Blah, 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 blah. And by not making any decision, you're not getting anywhere.
Yep.
What you guys did is make decisions along the way, find out if they worked for you or if they didn't, and went along with the decision that you made. As in, go along with your decisions. And I think that's...
You never know beforehand.
Exactly. It's impossible to find the right answers to that. It's like golf. I think that's the key of... what?
It's like golf. It's a perfect metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. Decide, so,
yeah,
just hit it, see where it goes.
Yeah, no regrets. You know, like, just hit it, give it your best.
You can regret it all you want, but the ball is now there in the bushes. So
exactly,
the next hit is gonna be from the bushes. So, you know,
it's a good metaphor. Exactly, like, you should deal with the consequences of your decisions, and you should redirect when necessary. But the main key here is, keep on moving, you know, stay in motion. That's the most important thing. The moment you start standing still and not make any decisions, you freeze and it's kind of dumb.
Also, for, then that sounds dumb, but for standing still, sometimes that can be a decision as well. Sometimes you can decide, this month I'm not going to make music, or hey, this week I'm going on holiday. Also, bewust, how do you say, like, really conscious. Make that decision consciously, like, hey, or like tomorrow.
But even in that example, you're still in motion because you made a decision to go on a holiday.
Or like, hey, tomorrow I'm not doing any work, I'm gonna binge Netflix. That's indeed still a decision, but it's also important to actually make that choice, because otherwise sometimes you're on the couch and you're browsing Netflix while you know you should do something else, and then you're kind of like not really enjoying Netflix because instead you should say, okay, now I'm going to watch 2 hours of Netflix, then I'm going to do that. And then you can actually, for 2 hours, switch off. It's amazing.
Have you seen Extraction 2?
No.
It's a kick-ass movie. I didn't expect so much from it, but it looks really cool.
Where can we see it?
Netflix.
Ooh.
Extraction 2, but that insinuates that there's also an Extraction 1.
Which was also fine. But this one, I was really amazed.
And should you watch 1 before 2, or doesn't that matter?
No, it doesn't matter. You can watch them both.
Okay. What is it about?
It was important to
but
bring
is it,
up.
Is it related to the decision making, or?
No, I just mentioned Netflix, I guess. And then that came
I gone again?
Oh, no, you're not gone again.
Oh, I was going a little bit. Hey, hello. What were we talking about? Extraction 2.
Yeah, no worries. Okay.
No, it's just a cool movie. And if you don't know what to watch, I can recommend it. It's full packed action. Chris Hemsworth looking amazing. Nice body.
Ripped.
And
thanks for input.
Yes.
Bye. Okay, last topic. How do you guys maintain motivation?
Last topic. Why don't stop you then?
Yeah, last topic. But how do you guys maintain motivation? Because even when you're at the point where you're making a living from your music, you're probably still gonna have moments where you feel like, why am I still doing this? And in those times, how do you maintain motivation to keep doing what you do?
No, I'm actually always motivated. I do sometimes think, what am I doing actually? But that's just sometimes I don't have a clue. But no, I live the most fantastic life there is. Couldn't complain.
And what makes
it's hard to not stay motivated.
What makes it a fantastic life, in your opinion? What do you have which gives you the feeling of living a fantastic life?
Money.
Best job.
A lot of money.
A lot of vagina. Do you know the movie?
Austin Powers.
Austin Powers, yeah. No.
I have a wife. I find this sometimes more difficult.
She's next door.
Because it's just, sometimes it's hard to stay motivated, especially when things don't seem to go your way and you're kind of like, hey, my music, I'm making awesome music. And then the next week I send it and no one replies. And it can really like seem like a long time. But then you need to also just focus on just keep going, and also focus on the other parts of your life which are amazing, or hey, where else do I need to work on? Make sure you work out. I think for me mentally it's so important, and I really notice when I don't work out enough, I slowly but surely get more lazy and a bit more I get naggy at things, and like, so that's for me also a really important one. And it takes your focus off of everything for a while, basically. So also find something like that.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the last thing. I found, for example, from golf. Golf for me is a period of the week where I play that sport. It's not really a sport. But I forget about everything else and find something like that. Very important to switch off.
I have to with gaming, but I think it's also really important. It's real easy to be stuck seeing the negativity, you know. Like for instance, I think we're going really well at the moment. Our streams are up from I don't know what, maybe 100% in the first half year, and I don't know.
You started smiling, I didn't.
No, but then there's sometimes also some things don't fall into place. You don't get the right bookings you wanted, and I don't know what. And then it's also real easy to be stuck in the things that are not going right. And of course, you need to make some effort to make them go right. So ask for feedback. What can I do? You should always do that. But it's also, don't get stuck in what's not going really well. Be also really happy about what is going well. And what I can hear also, man, if I look at some DJs' Twitters, it's always about this and this and the airport, blah, 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 and delay, what the fuck. And I think, dude, you're describing a normal day job. Everybody has their struggles, but you get so much in return from it. Who cares? Who cares? Nobody goes to the airport every day. Not a DJ plays 7 days a week. Count the days you actually are free. Most DJs actually play only 3 days a week, so they have a good life. We all do. Be happy for it and don't get stuck in the negativity.
There's some frustration in here. I kind of feel.
I think we need to emphasize that we're very lucky and that we have a really good life. And
I also think as soon as you're not focused or working on the things that you can do better, if you don't work on that, then is the time where you start noticing, you start hating on the things that don't work well in your thing. So you start blaming other people for stuff.
Yeah, but that's the negative spiral.
Yeah. But then you need to realize, hey, wait, I'm probably not working on stuff that is making me feel that way. And there's always stuff where you're like, oh, I should actually do that, but I've been postponing it. And then if you don't focus on that, you start to blame other people for not doing their work.
Yeah,
if you're really focused on what you should do, you don't have time to blame people for...
No, then it's the record label's fault, then it's the manager's fault, then it's someone's fault, and then it's because this and blah, 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 blah. No, and... But yeah, that's... Yeah, there's always stuff going wrong and there's always stuff going right.
And that's why...
I mean, it's... I think it's always, if you finish a track, that's also a big accomplishment. It's really hard to finish tracks. I don't know what you, why you guys are actually
smiling again. No, I'm laughing because I tried to interrupt. I wanted to say, that's why golf.
Oh, man, shut the fuck up.
No, listen. Golf is the best metaphor for life ever.
Can we quit now, Joey? Are we done?
You'll one day quit golf and start golf and realize this.
Can we stop? Hey, I have a good idea, Joey. If we have another guest instead of Joey, instead of Jupke,
like switch it up.
Like a real golf player.
Now listen. In golf, there's only ever yourself to blame. You can blame your clubs or the weather or whatever, but it's always comes down to you.
And what if you hit a bird?
Yeah, that's your fault. And it was always going to happen. It was inevitable. That's what I also like about golf. If you hit a shot, there it is. It's decided how it's going to land. It's decided how it's going to bounce.
Okay.
It's amazing.
And who's your manager? I think they should put you on a golf podcast and not this producing podcast. Yeah.
Maybe.
It's not a producing podcast. It's an artist mindset podcast.
Oh, mindset.
Yeah. Wrong room.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Look. Exit.
Yeah, guys, we're 1 hour in. I think we're over the peak.
Yeah, we are.
We've been there. Maybe a shameless plug for everyone listening right now. Jupke just launched a new video in the Online Academy where he talks about how he made his track Call Me Anytime. It's already live. And Ralph is probably going live next week, I think, the next one.
Yeah, but I got to say it's a little bit blurry. My stupid OBS, I just cannot get it to work properly.
So you're just going to keep blaming the...
OBS.
Yeah.
No, I said I cannot get it to work properly.
You said stupid OBS.
I cannot. I think it's also a stupid program. It's okay, about scaling. I don't want scaling, but that interface.
But are we going to put it live next week?
Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah, so you're going to get a blurry video of Ralph explaining, is it 16 jaren?
16 jaren, yes. 16 jaren. Brand new track out this Friday on Hell Deep. You can get it on all the streaming portals. It's actually on Beatport already, I think. I'm
what?
Not sure.
Exclusively.
Yeah, and nice. It's real cool. I think it's the best track ever. And I'm being modest. No, it's actually a really cool track.
Being modest.
Cool. Well, so new content in the Academy from now on. And we'll see you back next month with another deep talk like this. And
did it go somewhere this time?
Probably. Let's see what the feedback brings us.
We'll ask James.
Yeah,
James, tell us if this was somewhat better than next one, the last one.
Yeah.
Better
cool,
than
guys.
Next one.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.